Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello everyone, welcome back to Blood Ties. I'm Geoffrey Wonsall and I'm here on my own today without my daughter Molly, who usually does these podcasts with me because she's busy, I'm afraid. And anyway, I'm in the middle of telling what I think is one of the, in many ways, the most terrifying stories of all in these many podcasts. It all concerns a man called Kenneth Regan, who was born Kenneth Avery, and had the nickname of Captain Cash. Believe me, this is not a pleasant story. As I've said before, I don't like gangsters at all, and I don't like even attempting, even marginally, glamorising them. They're very far from glamorous people. They are horrifying, terrifying, and quite rightly strike fear into the hearts of many people. There's nothing nice nor glamorous about being a professional gangster, as Kenneth Regan is about to amply demonstrate. You may remember at the beginning of the first episode of Captain Cash that he had kidnapped a man called Anil Chauhan, who ran a freight company in Heston, not far from Heathrow Airport, with the objective of taking over the business and using it as a front for money laundering, drug smuggling and drug smuggling. Chauhan was a little on the flaky side, but nevertheless, Regan saw him as a mark. He'd been driving trucks for him and as a job after he'd been thrown out of prison in the wake of turning supergrass in no fewer than 5 drugs trials. Regan, his accomplice, William Bill Hornsey, and a man called Peter Rees have kidnapped Anil Chauhan and kept him in Regan's father's house near Salisbury, where they've forced him to sign all manner of blank sheets of paper, strange documents, effectively giving power to Regan to take over Chauhan's company called Seba. They'd kidnapped him at a meeting at Stonehenge on the 13th of February 2003. It was a Thursday. And had subjected him to they drugged him with GHB, the rape drug, and they tortured him. I think Chauhan at that point felt that his life was very much in danger. And he did something quite remarkable. He got a letter that had been sent to Regan's father at the house, addressed to Regan's father, who was called Avery, and folded it up when no one was looking and put it into his shoe. Now, you can only imagine that Anil Chauhan realised that he wanted to give any investigator in the future a clue as to what had happened to him. It was in many ways extraordinarily prescient. But what Anil couldn't have known is that on Saturday the 15th of February, Hornsey and Regan left Peter Rees to look after Chohan, got into a hired van and went to Chohan's house in Hounslow. They had decided that they had no alternative other than to kill the rest of Chohan's family. At that point, I'm sure Chohan didn't know what they were intending to do. The four inhabitants of the house were, of course, Anil's wife, Nancy, their two children, 18-month-old Devinder and 8-week-old baby brother, Ravinder, as well as Nancy's mother, Charanjit Kaur, who was aged 52. She was visiting the family from India. She was a teacher. The two men tricked their way into Chohan's house. Nancy did not like Regan. She made no secret of it. A lot of people knew she didn't. But nevertheless, I suspect Regan said, "Oh, I know where Chohan is. Don't worry. I bring news." And Nancy would have been sufficiently anxious about her disappeared husband that she would have let him in. It was a terrible mistake. For without the slightest remorse, Regan and Hornsey set about killing all the inhabitants of the house. The 18-month-old, the 8-week-old, Anil's wife Nancy, and her mother, Charanjit. They didn't show a moment's hesitation, and they didn't bat an eyelid. It's an act of butchery that it's very hard not to find grotesque. I mean, it's unbelievable that they should do this. Not only have they kidnapped and tortured Anil, but they've now destroyed the rest of his family without a moment's compunction or hesitation. They have put to death two tiny babies, a baby and a little toddler, and two women, one 52 and the other 25. It does defies belief, to be honest. He wiped out, Regan wiped out an entire family through sheer greed. As was later to emerge at the trial, as the judge put it, he was utterly without a conscience and he showed no remorse. But now the story gets even more bizarre. Bill Hornsey and Kenneth Regan load the four bodies into the truck the van they've hired, and take them back to Wiltshire. They leave the house a ghost ship. There's washing in the washing machine, half-eaten meals. It's extraordinary. I mean, it's just as if they'd disappeared off the face of the earth. Actually, they hadn't disappeared. They'd been thrown dead into the back of a van. That night, Anil was forced to leave telephone messages for his employees at Seba, telling them he'd sold the business to Regan and that he and his family had left for India because he was frightened and he'd done one or two wrong things. On the morning of Monday, this is after the Saturday in which Regan has killed, along with Hornsey, the four people in Chohan's house, Regan arrives at the offices of Seba Freight, complete with a letter from Amarjit Chohan, written, of course, under the most extreme duress, saying it had been exporting illegal drugs, before adding, and I quote from the letter that Regan had forced Chohan to write, "Some people are after me and I have to escape. I fear for the safety of my family." The staff accepted the story, and Regan installed himself as the new boss. By that point, however, Anil Chauhan had also been killed by Regan and Hornsey. And Rhys, who'd been looking after him in Regan's father's house. It's a bleak, heartless act of greed of the highest order. Regan wanted to get his hands on a business that he could launder money through and import drugs through. On the Wednesday, that would be the 19th of February 2003, Regan goes back to his father's house in Salisbury and piles the five bodies of the Chauhan family into the hired van, and he drives them to the house of the woman he'd become infatuated with before serving his first jail term, Brenda Blewin, who lives in Devon. She had a little farm with a number of acres, where Hornsey and Rhys have hired a digger, the sort of thing you see digging up your road outside your house, to dig holes for the bodies. Bruin was not there. It was not her part, no part of her plan. She didn't know what was going on. And when she turned up, the men explained they were sorting out what they called a drainage problem for her as a gift. Well, the drainage problem was five dead bodies, including two infants. After that, Regan disposed of Chauhan's car, which he'd driven to the original meeting at Stonehenge a week earlier, to remove all traces of Chauhan from the face of the earth. Now, Regan's plan to take over the business might well have worked, were it not for the fact that Nancy, Chauhan's wife, was very close to her brother, Onkar Verma, who lived in New Zealand. So close, in fact, they spoke to each other almost every day on the phone. Regan told Chauhan's brother, Onkar Verma, that the entire family had left the country. But Onkar Verma simply didn't believe it. He knew that Nancy would at least have told him, and he started pestering the police to investigate what happened to his sister. In fact, he became so concerned that in March, early March 2003, he flew to England to persuade them that they should search the family house in Hounslow. Well, finally, the police give in. And they find the house deserted, the washing machines full, there are uneaten meals, unfinished meals on the table in the kitchen. And what's more, the police also discover that the family's bank accounts haven't been touched since their disappearance. And they launched a full-scale inquiry. The police arrive at Seba's Freight's offices and interview Regan. And not surprisingly, they quickly become very suspicious about the letters that Chauhan left before leaving the country so abruptly. Regan realises that this may not work. Still, Regan has got a trick or two up his sleeve. At the end of March, as the police investigation continues, a typewritten letter with a Calais postmark is sent to Chauhan's workplace, to Seba, purportedly from Anil, saying that he and the family were in France and planning to travel on to India. Well, it was just another of those blank sheets of paper that poor Anil had been forced to sign. There was no way they'd gone anywhere. In fact, we know they'd actually been buried in Brenda Bluin's farm in Devon. But nevertheless, Regan is attempting to keep up the pretense. It isn't going to work. Now, in something of a panic, Regan decides to return to the farm where he's buried the bodies and move them. He goes back to Bruin's house in Devon, digs up the five bodies and puts them in another hired van. He's wrapped the bodies in carpets, and I remember vividly Hornsey's description of looking at the body of Anil Chauhan, saying it looked like a Christmas cracker. It was no laughing matter. It's extraordinary, but there you go. Sometimes life is utterly extraordinary. On the Easter weekend of 2003, Regan, Hornsey and Rhys hire another van, load the bodies into it, and then drive it to Bournemouth, not that far from Salisbury, an hour or so. They hire a boat, and he and Hornsey dump the five bodies, father, mother, two children and mother-in-law, into the English Channel, into the sea off Dorset. Just 2 days later, a father and his son, who are canoeing just off Bournemouth Pier, find a body in the water. It was quite rapidly identified as Anil, give him his nickname, Amarjit Chauhan. Even more extraordinary is that the police find in his shoe, folded up many times, an envelope that gives the address of Kenneth Regan and his father. An extraordinarily perceptive thing to do, but clearly driven by the intense fear that Chauhan must have felt. Well, by this point, Regan and Hornsey know perfectly well that the game is very, very much up, and they leave the country. They get on a ferry from Dover and go to France. It comes just before the formal identification of Anil Chauhan. Another couple of days later, and officers from Scotland Yard say they want to interview Regan and Hornsey in connection with the discovery of the body. And they also go on to name Peter Rees as a close associate of these two prime suspects. Well, the net is beginning to close, but the horror isn't really finished yet. On the 15th of July, 2003. Nancy Chohan's decomposed body was found in some fishermen's nets off Poole in Dorset. And on the 7th of September 2003, the body of her mother, even more severely decomposed, was found on a beach at Alum Bay in the Isle of Wight. But thankfully, by that point, all three men were actually in custody. Rees is arrested at a pub in Colford in the Forest of Dean on the 14th of May. On the 2nd of August 2003, Regan actually runs out of money in Spain, where he's gone, and is finally arrested at a campsite in Ghent in Belgium. And on the 2nd of September 2003, Hornsey returns to Dover and...
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hands himself in to the police. Hornsey is charged with the murder of Anil and the rest of the Chohan family. He's also charged with kidnap, false imprisonment, perverting the course of justice, and preventing Anil Chohan's lawful and decent burial. Regan is also charged, as is Rees, with his grotesque, horrifying murder. The trial begins a year or so later, on the 8th of November 2004. All three men appear at the Old Bailey. All three men plead not guilty. It's almost inconceivable, isn't it, that they would, but nevertheless they have. Although at this point it's obvious that Peter Rees is distancing himself from Hornsey and Regan. He clearly wasn't a prime mover. He was brought in, I think, probably as the muscle, or stupid muscle perhaps, but nevertheless. And during the trial, Richard Harwell QC, prosecuting, said Regan and Hornsey had a unique bond. Even though Regan had grassed him up in 1998, he'd come back for more, and there could be no greater loyalty. The prosecutor also said Regan was the ringleader, with Hornsey acting as his right-hand man, and Rees, the younger and stronger of the three, recruited to carry out a number of tasks. Regan continued to maintain his story, which he'd been telling the police since his arrest, that he was forced to dispose of the bodies by a gang of Asians who'd killed Chohan in a row over smuggling a narcotic shrub called khat, and was threatened dire consequences if he didn't do so. Rees said at the trial that he'd known Hornsey for almost 20 years and owed him £3,000 for cars he'd been given. But Hornsey did admit during the trial that he had been involved in digging ditches at Linda Bluen's property in Devon. Rees's defence barrister described Reagan as a devious, violent, and manipulative liar. At one point, Reese described Reagan as a psychopath. The defense, Reagan's defense barristers also tried to suggest that the letter found, or the envelope found in Annual's sock when his body was found off Bournemouth Pier, had been put there as part of a conspiracy by the police to fit him up for the murder. The 8 month trial was the longest murder trial in the history of the Met, and the trial alone cost over £10 million. It was no easy decision either. The jury took 13 days to return their verdict. No small amount of time. But they found all three men guilty. Well, it's very difficult to see how they could, how might not have done, but nevertheless. Judge Stephen Mitchell told Reagan and Hornsey, "Your crimes are uniquely terrible. The cold-blooded murder of an 8-week-old baby and an 18-month-old toddler, not to mention the murders of their mother, father and grandmother, provide a chilling insight into the utterly perverted standards by which you've lived your lives. Your characters are as despicable as your crimes. Each of you is a practiced, resourceful and manipulative liar." Neither Reagan nor Hornsey, who had sat impassively in the dock during the sentencing, showed any emotion at all as they were taken down to the cells. Both were given whole life terms of imprisonment. They would never even be considered for release. Reese was convicted of the murder of Annual Shohan, as well as being convicted for assisting an offender, but was cleared of the other four murders. He was sentenced to life with a minimum of 23 years, and Judge Stephen Mitchell accepted that Reese had acted as a foot soldier in the crime. Well, what can anyone possibly say, except it's a tragedy? The boys' bodies, the bodies of the 8-month-old, 18-month-old and the 8-week-old, were never discovered. Neither Reagan nor Hornsey has ever said what happened to them. It's just simply assumed that they were dumped into the sea, along with Nancy Annual and Nancy's mother. In 2014, that is, long after the end of the trial, they launch an appeal against their convictions. Reagan's defence this time is that he hadn't given evidence in his original trial because he'd received threats from the Islamic group Al-Qaeda. Well, hardly surprising, the Court of Appeal did not take kindly to that. In a judgment, Lady Justice Rafferty said, "Reagan's contention that he did not give evidence because he was threatened by Al-Qaeda is not an arguable ground for appealing. The evidence against you was formidable and the case was very fairly and comprehensively summed up." If any other epilogue is needed to this dreadful story, it's the statement by Nancy's brother, Onkar Verma, who persuaded the police to take an interest in the first instance, when he gave a statement outside the court at the end of the trial, when he said, "The last 2 years have been a living nightmare. The deliberate, premeditated slaughter of my innocent family is akin to me being given a life sentence, a life with no laughter, no happiness, and no joy." It is one of the most frightening cases I've ever described. And in my book on men with whole life sentences, I remarked there is little chance that either Regan or Hornsey will launch a further appeal, and both are certain, or almost certain, to spend the rest of their lives in prison, keeping the secret of what happened to the Chohan children to themselves. There can be little doubt that they would present a danger to the public were they ever to be released. And here comes the question. But did the possibility of a whole life term of imprisonment deter either man? The answer must surely be no. That then is the story of Captain Cash. Horrifying, dreadful, and at the same time, it brings tears to your eyes. That family suffered for no reason other than Regan's greed and malice. It's extraordinary. It takes my breath away. But that's the end of this week's podcast, the end of Captain Cash. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to all the people who helped me, and Molly. Thank you to Sam Brain, our producer, to my son Dan, who wrote the music, to George, who did the caricature, to Audible for supporting us and providing us with the platform. And most of all, thank you to you, the reader, the listeners, for being there, for supporting us, for listening. I hope you find it interesting. I look forward to talking to you again soon. Thank you again, and remember, do be careful out there.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.